All right, so understanding that no two cases are the same, understanding that every case is going to be a little different. But when it comes to prosecutors and judges and the whole judicial system, when it comes to pleading charges down to prompt a guilty plea, what goes into that? What are the nuts and bolts and in the consideration of pleading down charges for a suspect, and just kind of what goes into that? That's where Todd Flood steps in, attorney at Flood Law. Todd, it's good to have you with us. Obviously, I'm sure you've been following this heartbreaking case of 2-year-old Wintergreen.
Horrific case.
It is horrific, and I want to focus on now the clear suspect in this case. Because this is a guy, 26 years old. He is being charged as a four-time habitual offender. He was already on probation after pleading guilty to 5 different federal charges, and he was on probation. So, how is it that this guy's able to walk around the streets?
Well, remember an adage we take in the courts: good cases don't go to trial. So normally, if it's a good case for the defense, the prosecution gives you an offer you can't refuse. If it's a good case for the prosecution, the defense is trying to eke out some sort of plea bargain in a case. As it relates to this animal, that this man that committed this heinous crime beyond comprehension, we don't know the facts and circumstances. He may have picked up one case that had 5 different counts or 4 different counts in one setting, making him an habitual fourth. Pleading the case out was the defense attorney and the prosecution weighing whether or not they had a good case to go to trial or not. At the end of the day, when you have someone that's walking around on probation and is not being monitored for whatever reason, or is being monitored but not really having a thorough monitor on him as far as checking in, finding out, you know, his stability, because obviously this is a man that's either 1, serious mental illness, 2, drugs, 3, all of the above, and you need to have some prophylactic measure that, you know, I hate to use this this soundboard, but the resources to monitor, to have probation officers, because there's a lot of great ones. I know them, and they work their tails off, but there's not enough. And when you are basically trying to not over, you know, fill jails and prisons, and you're trying to rehabilitate, you're also an attempt making sure that you have some sort of good monitoring on this particular person on probation. But you know what's scary to me is this man didn't wake up one day and commit this heinous of a crime.
Right.
This is someone that is disturbed. And how is it that all the system missed that disturbance? I see people with cases that have been denied bond that had committed a case allegedly 25 years ago and not picked up another one. Now you see someone like this guy out there. How was it missed? And I'm just going to go back to the adage. We have to have the right people in the right seats, and we have to have the resources to support them. There's so much technology out there. There's so many different types of resources. We have to have it. And I could go on and on and on, but that is something that I want to see, and I think a lot of people want to see in our criminal justice system.
So is it just a matter of money? Is it just a matter of funds to be able to adequately staff probation offices and officers and making sure that they're not overwhelmed? Is that kind of the main answer?
It's one of the big ones. Financial funding, finding the right people too, right? You know,
right.
You got to have, I mean, you try to hire somebody today. I interviewed 20 people for a position. I thought I owed them something when they walked out the door. At the end of the day, you got to find the right people for the right seat that care. You got to care about the place you live. You got to care about the job you want. And it's difficult, but they're out there. they're there, and there's a process to inspire these younger people to get into the positions that they find a passion for. Just need to do it, and it's one, the people; two, it's the resources.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
I know that you also follow what's happening with the Supreme Court. They're going to be considering a case as it pertains to, and this, I tie this in with this Winter Smith story, because
sure.
There was a domestic abuse here, and the Supreme Court in D.C. is considering whether or not domestic abusers have the right to carry firearms. Now, I just want to provide a little bit of background for folks. In 2019, this guy down in Texas assaulted his girlfriend. He threatened to shoot her. She filed for a restraining order and got it. In a matter of weeks, this guy was involved in five different shootings, ranging from road rage shootings to just shooting a gun in the air because a guy he was with didn't get the proper order at a fast food restaurant. And because of other legal precedent and decisions from various courts, this guy was charged. He was sentenced to prison. But because of those cases, the way they played out, he had his record expunged. So he is free.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of background. So, and it starts with the United States Supreme Court and the New York case.
Correct.
Of Bruin. You may remember that case, but I think the court got it right, but they just really screwed up the next set of cases coming down because they totally abolished a balancing test. And Bruin, basically they said, hey, listen, you can't have this second step in New York City to have someone, decide whether or not you have a special need for a gun. Okay, fine. So what do? They say the Supreme Court will look back in history and see if what they did in history and if it was applicable back then. They don't give you a date. So this guy that you just mentioned, Rihanna, that the Supreme Court is considering taking up, he in turn commits a domestic violence, and he gets a restraining order put on him. He's not allowed to have a gun. He gets a gun, jury convicts him. He appeals. The appellate court, he argues this, back in 1868, they didn't have any kind of prohibition on domestic violence offenders having a gun. So what happened? The case that he was convicted on got reversed because of the United States Supreme Court basically abolishing, saying we'll go back in time. Well, what's wild about that case is back in 1868, they didn't have domestic violence.
Right.
They didn't have marital rape. They didn't have these crimes. So it's wild to me, but normally, not to get too much into the weeds, cases are usually used in the Supreme Court. We get a balancing test. And the balancing test, like say, for example, you want to hold a parade. You go to the city, you say, I want to get a parade permit. Okay, that's fine. That's legal. But it's not okay if I charge you $100,000 to hold your parade. That's usury. That's not acceptable. So
right.
We do a balancing test. Here, the Supreme Court basically took away that balancing test. What does that mean? Well, you know what? How old should you be, Chris, to own a gun? I have, with three kids back when they were 8 and 9. I don't think that's a good age for them to hold a gun. But the Constitution is silent.
Correct.
On the age. Nowadays, let's balance it. We send a young man at 17 to war. We have him kill the enemy. But he comes back into civilian life over here, not allowed to have a gun. There's a balance to it. The Supreme Court took away that balance. And I'm a Second Amendment guy. I have no problem. But I don't like the textual spot of it.
Well,
it
the historical precedent is what doesn't make sense. So then, what is your gut on how they rule on this?
It's always interesting. Let's watch the Supreme Court because they're going to see their faux pas. And I believe it happens all the time. You will see some justices peel back their opinion in Bruin, and they won't follow along. They'll start to see the error of their ways. If they followed Bruin, you're going to see
the case out of
no
New York.
Balancing. Yep.
Yep.
If they follow that down the line, I think you're going to see more errors in this. And it really, I mean, hey, listen, the right to bear arms, does that mean you got the right to bear a nuclear weapon?
It's a great question.
Right?
Todd Flood, I'm up against it. Appreciate the time as always. Got to take a break.